I'm here to comment on the fiscal feasibility of this. So I want to start out with some numbers that I found a little bit ago putting online. So the city of San Francisco spends $340 million every year on patrols for SFPD. It spends $250 million, which is a smaller number, on homelessness services. And we're considering spending $26 million, the smallest of the three numbers, on this project. I think the $26 million will be a huge investment and go very, 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 very far away towards reducing the amount that we are required to spend on homelessness services, because if you think about this, 2,000, 1,000 some families get off the street and then they're not, you know, reliant on SFPD and not reliant on homelessness services, and they're actually like able to contribute to the city in a much more positive and impactful way. So I think $26 million subsidy is a great thing. I also agree with the previous speaker about the cost of it belonging to the parking deck. I think it's a bit obnoxious. And I also want to talk about this. So earlier, one of the commissioners, or one of the members up here had said, let's see. You were concerned about the cost of street improvements for the increased traffic, and then a couple sentences later, without any sense of irony, I wouldn't mind adding another 500 units of parking. It seems to me that if we want to improve the transit accessibility, the answer is to stop having trains share the right-of-way with cars. And I don't think adding more cars through adding more parking is really a good way to do that. So adding more parking to this is totally going to be a huge financial drain on SFMTA. It's going to be a drain on public infrastructure. It's going to be a drain on BART, because all these things, like, I'm not a car. I don't drive. Young people like me don't drive. The future is a car-free future. The future is bike share. Why are we planning for the 1950s and not 2020? So please consider reducing the parking, maximizing the number of units, getting the most money out of this so we can reduce the money that we spend on homelessness services by making sure people aren't going homeless. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Drew Ernie, E-R-N-Y, and I live a couple blocks away in Dandelion. I was honestly surprised how little it costs to build housing in this city. I just assumed it would cost like $1 billion to put up like a birdhouse. So I'm really excited that it's like so low cost to like $26 million to put up 1,000 units in San Francisco. That sounds great. Although I would like future fiscal feasibility studies to include the cost in city resources that it takes to have like all of these meetings to appease everyone who wants to add their like every little input to the project. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Yap Vail. I live in Soma, and I'm also a member of UB Action. I would like to comment specifically on something that I just heard a little while ago about how allegedly new housing like this will require all sorts of transportation upgrades, which would indeed be nice. I can't disagree that undergrounding some of these muni lines would not be an awful idea. But then the conclusion came that if we can't do that, then the alternative should just be to reduce the number of units. I would like to see, personally, when these sorts of analyses are done, the possibility that a larger number of units might actually generate more tax revenue and might actually be able to fund these things. When we say, oh, all of this housing, it's going to cause a need for all of these services, therefore we shouldn't build it, and have less tax revenue to fund all of these services, these things cut both ways. I don't know if there's any room in any of these sorts of studies to go back on decisions that have already been made, but I would like to make this point, and I think I've done so. Thank you so much.
Hello, my name is Milo Trouse. First of all, I'm glad this meeting is happening here. It's more accessible for folks who are impacted by this proposal that don't necessarily live right next to it, such as myself. And I'd like to echo the point that the city, we should be spending our money on homes and not parking. Homes are much more important. People are more, the need for housing is much greater than the need for parking. And people are, you know, we're talking about economic impact. People generate value in ways that cars don't. The car's just, it's going to suck resources. So we should welcome more people and put our resources to bringing more people. And they not only will spend money, but they'll make money for their employers and just overall benefit the city much more positively. Thank you.
Oh, hey, my name is Darius. I am from the Mission Terrace neighborhood. It's actually on the other side of Balboa Park, kind of in the same neighborhood. I wasn't going to say anything, just sitting here and absorbing all the great information. I wanted to just point out one thing that a previous person said that I that kind of got me wanting to say my piece a little bit. First, it was the gentleman about transportation improvements and versus housing units and that dichotomy. I want to agree with some of the other people that have spoken to say that it's really important to fix our transportation. I walk up that street, Ocean Avenue, and I'm in that area all the time, and it needs fixed now, fixing now. So I agree with that, but I don't support the idea that we need to, A, reduce the number of housing. I think we should increase it. Don't reduce it, increase it at the very least, and then B, not spend $1 billion digging a hole to put a train in the ground to put a train in. I mean, we learned nothing from Boston's big dig and what's going on in Union Square right now. Like, it's expensive and it's complicated. I think there are various other ways we can have this conversation on how do we get those above ground trains to be better. And an example I like is here in the city, Geary Avenue. I used to live in the Sunset, in the Richmond. You know, they're using the lanes specifically for the buses and kind of carving out that new Geary Boulevard kind of bus strip thingy they're doing. I don't know how expensive it is. I don't know how much it would cost if it's possible. But I think it's something we should consider. And then also, I want to ask one question about kind of food accessibility as well in those neighborhoods. In that neighborhood specifically, low cost and healthy food, because there is the Whole Foods there, but Whole Foods is not affordable for everyone. So what? And there are other places there. So that's my question.
Monica Collins, Sunnyside. I'd like to agree with Darius's last point, which I think is very important. Whole Foods runs out of stuff a lot. It's very much like a Molly Stone, or, you know, Safeway could be a Whole Foods. They have organic food, and Whole Foods runs out a lot, and it's much more costly than, say, Trader Joe's. So I drive much less than I used to, and for some very good reasons. I don't think car shaming works. There are people who need to drive. I don't like it, but that's how they get here. They can't afford to live here. They cannot afford a $4,000 a month one-bedroom apartment, which is the price of an Avalon Day rental. Price of rents are going up, and price of storefronts and commercial properties are not regulated. Cafes, the rents are going double. The price of goods, services, food, and all is tremendously inflated in OMI. So what are we going to see? Ethnic cleansing, like we saw in the Fillmore in the 60s, so that only certain folks are welcome anymore because they're the only ones that can afford it. I worked at City College since 2002 in student services, and whenever I go out, I run into people who do depend on that ugly, unpopular parking lot, because they have to commute from Pinole. They have two kids, one in daycare, one in school. They have jobs. And guess what? They're in a state now, and they're following a course of study. Restaurant, child development, English major, hello. They are going somewhere, and they can be happy, successful taxpayers, or we can just car shame them and ignore their needs. I do support truly affordable housing for working class and middle class people. I support the Performing Arts Center, and I support student parking. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sonia Trouse. I live at 7th and Atoma Street. I'm really excited this meeting is finally downtown. When I first started organizing, one of the first meetings I organized around was getting people who live downtown and other parts of San Francisco to go to the Balboa Reservoir meeting down near the reservoir, because I thought it was really important that people from all over the city know what was happening down there and weigh in, because demand for housing moves around and what happens down there affects everyone in San Francisco. I was surprised, I guess I have a question. I was surprised to hear that it sounds like the issue, the topic of expected property tax revenues from this project doesn't seem to have been part of the presentation. I didn't see all of it. So now I want to know, what are the expected revenues? I guess property taxes, but also if they're, sales tax, I don't know, but property tax seems like the easiest one. Is that on there? It is on there? All right. Okay, I'll look. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Aaron. I'm a member of UMB Action. I live in Russian Hill. I think this project would be more fiscally feasible with more units. Right now, it's 500 subsidized units and 500 market rate ones. With this dependency on the subsidy from the taxpayers, if it were around 2,500 units altogether, then it would reduce that subsidy, that dependence, and be more fiscally feasible. Also, it's not correct to say that it has the impact on the transportation infrastructure, since if we don't build the units, then more people will be forced to commute from Tracy, and that's more expensive, actually, on transportation infrastructure as a whole, going across the bridge and through the tunnels. So bringing some of those people into this site would actually save money on the transportation infrastructure, and so I think we should support that.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Hagee from Sunnyside, which is adjacent to this project. First, I think it's important to understand that the location is by the 280 freeway, so it is a major place for cars. Whether you drive or not, there will be cars, because people do use that to get onto the freeway. I think it's important to modify the Berkson document. There's no mention of the increased parking costs to students, because once the land becomes private, the state mandated lower parking costs for educational institutions no longer applies. City revenues and Pacific Union will benefit financially from use of the shared garage, but the burden of higher parking costs to students has been ignored in this plan. Second, there's no mention of a loss of revenue to City College by the state of California if there is a resultant drop in the number of student attendees who can't get to classes in a timely manner due to congestion and parking difficulties. Third, without a realistic report about congestion and the parking needs of City College, I don't understand how you can possibly create a feasibility analysis at this time. It's possible that another garage will be needed, and the cost of adding an additional garage for City College student parking on the east side of campus should be added to the costs of the project. 500 spots for sometimes available shared parking may be an inadequate substitute for the removal of more than 1,500 non-shared spots once the Performing Arts Education Center and the Reservoir have been developed. Thank you.
I'm going to intervene real quick. Jennifer, she has a scratchy voice, and she also provided her comments in writing. I'll provide this to staff, too, which will become part of the record. Rest your voice, Jennifer.
Andrew Menzer, Western Edition. So just to take off Martha's comments, as a former student, I just graduated from USF, my biggest expense, and, you know, frankly, the people who are helping me pay tuition's biggest expense, was rent. So this idea that parking, you know, having more lots is somehow holding students back from fulfilling their full potential is sort of ridiculous, when the allure and prospect of affordable housing can actually do that. I mean, I don't think we need more cars on the road in the city, frankly. It's enough, and going forward, people like me, people who are just moving into more apartments, are going to be using ride-sharing, different things. So it doesn't necessarily have to be more affordable housing, though that would be nice, but the idea of just sinking in more money to parking that just encourages congestion is sort of ridiculous. So, thank you.
Laura Fry, Westwood Park. I just want to reiterate what one of the neighbors said earlier about the whole fire protection thing, which wasn't brought up in this feasibility study at all. It's been in the neighborhood newspapers a lot the past half year that this part of the city doesn't have the same firefighting water that the denser parts of the city have, and that to put a really dense housing development here sounds to me, and that's what the articles were all talking about, it demands some kind of better fire protection like the denser parts of the city. And then I also just wanted to reiterate the whole thing about, you know, City College parking being totally replaced by 500 shared parking spaces just doesn't make sense. And no matter how many units you put in that thing, it's not going to house all the City College students that commute. There's a lot of City College students that commute. Thank you.
Harry Bernstein, Merced Heights. Of course, there is something in the executive summary that I just wanted to point out. I'll just read a brief part. The city has entered into exclusive negotiations with a team of developers, and then they're named, to create mixed income housing project at the site. As far as I understood it, when there was a PUC meeting, I think, in November when the exclusive negotiation with the developer was brought up to the SFPUC. And what I believe Mr. Carlin asked for was the authority to make a negotiation with the developer that would end up with things such as the public or other agencies would never talk to anybody but the developer about the future development. They would not talk to the PUC or anyone else, because that's what the exclusive negotiation means. So Mr. Carlo made it clear that he was seeking the authority to negotiate, and I would like that cleared up, whether that agreement has been made or is just in process, because the PUC was told that they would have a chance to weigh in on the final version. Also, I gather that the benefits of the sales of the property is for the PUC and its budget only. Is there any benefit for the city from this sale? And I also agree that the students do need parking, because it's a very congested campus, and with the Performing Arts Center coming in, it will not be manageable the way it is proposed.
Francine Lafrano, native San Francisco and 30-year resident of neighboring Westwood Park and CCSF alumni. Thus, I'm an advocate for the continued viability of City College, and I'd like to make the following points. At the December 14, 2017 Board of Trustees meeting, Underground Marketing noted that since their Free City campaign, the CCSF enrollment for fall 2017 was up 11%. Enrollment is forecasted to continue to increase, hence the need for parking is even more critical to CCSF. The Balboa Reservoir development, combined with the CCSF Performing Arts Center, will result in the loss of 2,000 parking spaces. The loss of so many parking spaces, combined with the increased enrollment and 1,100 to 1,300 proposed housing units with multiple people per unit who undoubtedly will have cars, will overwhelm the entire area with traffic congestion and a dramatic increased need for parking. With the loss of parking, CCSF enrollment will be jeopardized, thus threatening the fiscal impact on the city, which is significant. This dilemma needs to be carefully and prudent, needs careful and prudent analysis to determine the true fiscal impact of the and feasibility of the Balboa Reservoir development. Certainly the loss of parking study recently commissioned by the City College Facilities Commission needs to be completed and disseminated. Unless and until a proper parking analysis is done, any findings of fiscal feasibility by the Board of Supervisors will be woefully lacking a basis and obviously premature. Finally, please consider that two important advisory committees to the CCSF Board of Trustees felt that parking in the Balboa Reservoir development and the sale of public land important and impactful enough to unanimously pass resolutions against this development and also rejecting the Nelson Lygarde Transportation Demand Management Framework and advocating that public lands must stay in public hands. Damage to City College is damage to city revenue. Thank you. And I'd like to submit these comments for the record.
Chris Bowman, and I live over in Twin Peaks, but I have a lot of friends on the west side of town. I'm concerned about the density of the project. We're talking about 1,100 units on 18-acre plot. The average density per acre of Sunnyside and Westwood Park is about 13 or 14 units per acre. So we're talking about roughly 4 or 5 times the density. Someone from planning who spoke said it is logical or it's perfectly fine to have densely populated neighborhoods versus low density. I think that that's nonsense. If you look at all the west of Twin Peaks neighborhoods, they're roughly the same density throughout. The only difference is along transportation corridors like on Ocean. The second thing is that I don't believe that you're going to have $26 million for subsidy for affordable housing. I think one way that you can augment that is to not pay the PUC for the parcel. And quite frankly, the surplus property ordinance that was passed by the voters, I think last year or the year before, basically allowed the city departments to waive any charge that it would be, particularly if it's for development of affordable housing. So I think that you could augment that significantly. Finally, I think that the wear and tear, you can't just simply do a prorated basis when you're looking at wear and tear on roads, because if you're averaging it out for the city as a whole, you have different densities, but you're going to have a lot of density in this area. So I think it's probably about 1/4 of what the actual cost will be. I think it's probably closer to $320,000 than $80,000. Thank you.
Corey Smith, on behalf of the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. One point that was just made earlier was stated that the Board of Trustees for City College voted against this project. That's not true. They have not voted on it. The other thing is in regards to the conversation around lost revenue for City College, somehow related to the parking. Taking it back 30,000 feet a little bit, City College is now free. And it's free for San Francisco residents only. So while there are certainly going to be examples of people that will need to drive from within the city to City College in order to attend classes, its proximity next to a major transit hub will reduce that number in terms of attracting additional students due to Free City College, because people won't be traveling from the East Bay for Free City College because it's not something that's actually available to them. Thank you.
Other public comment regarding fiscal feasibility? Yes.
Hi, Robert from Alamo Square. I like to say that when I was a student, having a car was a tremendous expense. Insurance was insanely expensive. We shouldn't expect students to have a car, to have insurance, because that would make this project unaffordable for students if they have to depend on a car. So I think we can fit more people in this if we get rid of the parking requirements so we can have more people who are close by. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Theodore Randolph, a 20-something-year resident of the Excelsior District. And
I had a question about the fiscal feasibility. So it says, executive summary, basically, over $1 million more of revenue per year, so to the city, is their estimate. So we know that the estimates aren't like projections, and they're, the actual amount will probably be different. And I was wondering, what's the possibility of, or once it gets from a feasibility analysis to actual thing, how does that affect the, especially the affordable components? Like, if we are having $1 million extra revenue, why can't we put that $1 million into building even more affordable housing on the site?
Jonah Martin, Glen Park. I'm a former CCSF student, and a lot of the teachers that I knew when I was at CCSF came from other parts of the Bay, and their primary complaint was that housing in San Francisco was too expensive for them. That literally the reason they moved was because they could not afford to live in San Francisco, so they commute from other parts of the Bay to teach because they love City College. I think that this really is an opportunity for us to be a boon fiscally to our teachers at City College. I think they're some of the best educators in the Bay Area, and they deserve the ability to live where they work. And I think that this benefits not just them fiscally, but also the students fiscally. You know, tired teachers don't teach as well, and teachers who are there and present and available will be better serving our students, who then become future taxpayers, work inside of the city, and pay taxes towards that same process. It's the education returning to us, and I think we really need to focus on the number of housing units in this fiscal impact, really looking beyond just that bare minimum of how many can we place, but how high can we go? What's the most accessible number to offset this idea of parking being the end-all be-all? How many teachers won't be commuting by car anymore? How many students won't be commuting by car anymore? And a lot of the students that I commuted with either commuted by bike, like myself, if they lived inside of the city, or they took BART, they took Muni, they love the 8, the 49. I mean, now there's that great turnaround right next to City College. So, I mean, this is something where I think there's a thought about the wear and tear on the roads, but really, that's a main transit hub anyway. It is going to require the same amount of maintenance, regardless of if you build a new established housing or if you leave it as is because it's near the freeway. It's going to get all of that traffic regardless.
Hi, it's Francine again. I just wanted to correct a correction on my comment. Corey thought that I said the Board of Trustees for City College passed resolutions. I said that the two important advisory committees to the Board of Trustees unanimously passed resolutions against the development. So I just want to make sure everybody has that correct understanding. Thank you.
Hi, Francine gave me an idea. I would like to say that nothing I said before is my opinion. Monica Collins, Sunnyside. So what I said before was not my opinion.
Excuse me, ma'am. One speech per person for 2 minutes, and I understand I made a mistake in the last person, so I'll give you the indulgence of.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Muehlbauer.
More, but that's it, okay?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Muehlbauer. I understand. I would like to say, others may opine what they think City College students' lives are like. I've met thousands of them, and it's the real deal. The sun comes up in the morning, it actually happens. I missed it, it still happened. Thank you.
Okay, other non-repeating comments from the public? Okay, I'm going to return it back to the CAC for their comments with regard to this item, and I'll start with Howard. Michael?
Howard? No. Yes, I have a few comments. Chapter 29 of the Administrative Code provides, and this is the law that we're talking about today, that the board shall consider the fiscal feasibility of the project. And it says, using the following criteria: one, direct and indirect benefits of the project to the city. This legally means to the city and the county of San Francisco. As we've seen, the expert for the city has done a correct job of doing an analysis of the general revenues collected and then deducting from that any costs and expenses. So therefore, if there's ever a cost or expense or a detriment to the city, that has to be deducted. And while I haven't done any, I just got this letter on Friday, so I've only looked at it over the weekend. While we haven't done any legislative analysis, I would think that the purpose for this is quite clear. And that is, before the Board of Supervisors allows a major project to go forward, they want to make sure it's fiscally feasible. And that means that you take the pluses and the minuses and you bottom out the bottom number. And we recognize that everything you get is a positive, but there are minuses to that, and that means detriments. This morning, the Board of Directors of Westwood Park sent a letter to the city, and we couldn't copy anybody. And I'm always afraid of the Brown Act, so I don't do anything to the whole board here. But right now in public, I'm going to put on this table after my speech here a letter that was sent, and I know it's going to be part of the record because the city's already agreed that it's going to be part of the record. And it outlines our position, and it's quite clear. And it is that there are 2,000 parking spaces that are going to be eliminated right now by this project and the performing arts. With the elimination of that, this could be catastrophic to City College. In fact, at the PUC meeting and at various CAC meetings, representatives of both the developer and the city have told us that if we can't do a deal, and they are trying to do a deal with City College, but if we can't do a deal with City College based upon something to save City College and to put in alternative parking spaces, there will be no deal. That's what was said. That's been said many times. So therefore, what they're saying is, if we can't do a deal on this parking, the deal won't go forward. Now, in 2013, the legislative analysis, the budget and legislative analysis of the city, which I understand is going to take a look at this project, gave a memo to the board of directors. And it says that the amount of value, that is economic value, this isn't fictional value, the amount of economic value that City College gives to the city is $311 million. And I would imagine that number has gone up since then. $311 million. KQED, at the same time when this report came out from the legislative analysis, said that when the deadline for City College to lose its accreditation less than 10 months ago is running out, city officials are questioning its economic impact on the city. Economic impact, that's important. And that's what this report says. And they said the answer appears to be at least $311 million. Therefore, if City College is lost, the city loses $311 million. So I question, what if the city and City College cannot do a deal on alternative parking? I recognize we all want to cut down parking, but even the SFPUC recognized that parking was crucial. They approved the exclusive negotiating agreement, which I understand has been signed. That's correct. It has been signed. That answers one of the questions. It has been signed. But they said, when you come back here again, we want to know what you've done. And the city has agreed, and I believe that they are trying to do a deal here. And I really hope they do a deal to save City College, because if they lose all that parking, City College, the Board of Trustees, did pass a resolution just a 2 months ago saying they wanted increased enrollment. They've spent significant money for a marketing study to go out there and to get new students. So therefore, they want to increase students. What's going to happen if they don't solve this parking problem? Enrollment will go down. If enrollment goes down, that $311 million benefit to the city could go down. If City College has to close, all of that $311 million will be lost. That dwarfs the numbers we see in this report. As I see the report, there's a clear benefit of at least $2.7 million a year. That annually, and I would agree with that. That seems like good numbers, good solid numbers by a very good expert analysis. But what they have to take into consideration is what's going to happen to City College based upon the deal that's done between the city and City College. What if they agree, okay, we'll do this? Then some expert has to value how that reduces the value of City College, if it does. If it increases it, as we all hope, if they put a parking structure down at the football field and that solves the problem of City College, and City College says we're fine, then we're all happy. But then we can value the contribution that City College is getting to the city. So what I'm saying is, what Westwood Park is saying, what I'm saying as a member of the CAC, is it is premature to go to the supervisors with an analysis of fiscal feasibility when you can't tell. What happens in a year if we're told that the city and CCSF don't have a deal and the deal's off? Then you've spent a year of monies for an EIR that is not necessary. And I submit that the legal reason for passing this law, the legislative reason, was to save those type of expenses. So I'm saying let City College do its, it has a study that it started. As was stated, there is a parking study as to whether shared parking even works and as to how many parking units it will need in the future if it achieves its goals. So what I'm saying is let that study be done, let City College negotiate with the city and come up with a deal, and then once that's done, see how that economically impacts the city. And I submit until that's done, it's premature and it's not under the intent of this code section to do that before you know what the detriment would be. And I'm sorry, I'll distribute to the members of the CAC our letter, and I'll leave here. There's about 30 of them, 20 of them. So if anybody wants copies of the letter afterwards, and I'm sure the city can send them online too.
Okay, other comments?
The city of San Francisco thinks that City College is so valuable that it's paying over $5.5 to $6 million a year for tuition for that city. And just in November of 2016, the voters passed the voters always vote in favor of City College. So the city sees the tremendous benefits that City College gives. And to lose, to devalue City College by a development like this that doesn't solve the problems of City College is not in the interest of the city and county of San Francisco.
All right, other comments from the CAC? Maurice?
I just wanted to say that I would really like to see the SFMTA involved, because we can't just throw 1,100 units up on this space and not have Muni functioning the way it is. We definitely need more K cars running. We need more 43s running. We need more 8s running. We need more 29s running. So we can't just put all these people on this space and not have Muni functioning the way it is. I'd really like to see some feedback or have an SFMT rep come to the meetings and talk about how they're going to improve people that do ride public transit. So,
Christine? And John?
I always want to talk. I'm John Winston. I have a seat 9 here on the Balboa Reservoir Committee. I was appointed by the late Mayor Lee as an at-large representative, which means I represent the entire city. That's why I'm glad we're here today, and I'm glad people from the city at large showed up tonight. It's really great to see your faces and to hear your voices. I think this is going to be a great project. There's a lot of things that need to be worked out. And transportation, as you've heard tonight, is a lot of different viewpoints, but it's something we're going to have to figure out. The thing about City College is that they have 1,500 parking spots right now, that not 2,000, but 1,500 that are going to go away as a result of this project and the arts project in the upper reservoir. Those spots were available to the students for $40 a semester, which to me is unbelievably cheap. What we were doing was social engineering to encourage people to drive to school every day, and it was just wrong. And I think that the City College, if they're going to look at how to get their kids to students, just get to school every day and with the increased enrollment, that they need to come up with a transportation plan that doesn't include just cheap, plentiful parking. If they want to replace 1,500 parking spots with a huge parking structure, either in the reservoir or behind the football field, We're talking about the biggest parking structure in the city, or almost. The parking structure at 5th and Mission is 1,800 spots. Sutter Street Garage is 1,800 spots. Also, it's 10 stories tall. It's huge, and it costs parking spots. Indoor parking spots cost between $30,000 and $50,000 a piece. That's an outrageous amount of money to spend. And if the City College were to build those parking spots, they would have to charge $40 a semester. And they actually charge $20 a semester for people that are on financial aid. So that's untenable. We can't take a bond measure to pay for a parking structure that size and expect students to drive to fill the streets with their cars to fill this parking structure. So Victoria, it wasn't really with any irony that I said that it makes sense to build 500 spots on the reservoir. Possibly, I'm open to the idea, because we can charge market rate for those parking spots. And I think that we can use that money to pay for other things in the reservoir. As I was saying earlier, the transportation sustainability fee should be used to pay at the point of impact, because there is going to be an impact on this project, and we need to pay for the impact that we actually cause. And that means increasing bus service, increasing road service, funding the Ocean Avenue corridor redesign, which hasn't been funded between Phelan and BART. If you want to try and walk to the BART station, you're going to, it's like scurrying like a rat in a maze right now. So what we need to do is make that a dignified place to walk or ride a bicycle. And we should, you know, doesn't mean you have to take away capacity for cars, but definitely need to reduce the number of cars on the road. And the only way you can do that is by offering choice. And we're not saying you have to get out of your car. If you need to drive, you can drive. I'm not saying that you have to ride a bicycle, because not everybody can ride a bicycle. I understand that. And I'm not saying that you have to take the bus, but you do have to have a choice. And we have to be able to provide a choice for everybody to be able to find the best way to get to school, to get to their homes. And I believe it's incumbent on City College to come up with a plan, like every other community college in the country does, to figure out how to get their students to class and how to get their faculty to class.
My comments more are in the realm of all the estimates that are provided in this feasibility analysis. I would hope, and we're going to be meeting over this for the next 2 years at least, so my hope is that as time progresses, we can continue to sharpen our pencil and replace these estimates with real numbers or realer numbers, so that we can go into this with our eyes wide open. Now, before we move on to the last item, there were some comments here, and I think it might be appropriate, and there were some questions that came from public testimony, so I'd like to allow Emily a chance to give some initial responses and try to respond to some of these questions. Thank you.
Again, Emily Lesk, Office of Economic and Workforce Development. So there were some questions and comments about how the adverse impacts to the transportation system and the parking system are taken into account in this. And the short answer is that that's not in the scope of the fiscal feasibility analysis, but the purpose of the fiscal feasibility analysis is to allow us to begin the environmental review process, which explicitly studies both of those things. There was a clarification that I wanted to make about the exclusive negotiation agreement that the city and the SFPUC have with the development team. That does not mean that we are prohibited from talking to anyone, any community group, any other city agency, any organization. It means that we're prohibited from negotiating with another team of developers on the side. So the idea is that these guys are investing a lot of time and money into trying to make this project happen, and so they need assurances from us that we're not out there trying to cut a side deal. So that's what the exclusive negotiation agreement does. There was a question about the surplus property ordinance at the city level and the land sale to the SFPUC. So the SFPUC is an enterprise department, which we have a handful of agencies and departments in the city that have, they're like their own little business enterprise, and they have to pay their own costs and bring in their own revenue. And so agencies like that, including the SFMTA, are treated a little bit differently under the surplus property ordinance. They are required to get fair market value for their land, and the way that that benefits the city is that that goes into their budget, and they use that to pay for maintaining and upgrading their infrastructure system, and it impacts how much they need to charge all the ratepayers who buy water and wastewater service, and in some cases power in the city. It helps them offset those costs. Okay, so follow up to the request that we would come up with and finalize a parking strategy and a parking garage with City College before moving forward the fiscal feasibility and starting environmental review. So we are trying to build housing and want to keep the process moving forward. And we believe that, well, first of all, we are very strongly and fully committed to working with City College on a parking solution that is not going to impact their enrollment negatively, and therefore wouldn't have those types of worrisome effects on the city. We are going to need to take the final project back through the Board of Supervisors in the end, and we're going to be able to make that, or we're going to need to make that case, and I think it's accurate to say that we're not going to get the project through the Board of Supervisors without making that case. But what we're asking the board to do now is to give us the okay to move forward, to work on that parking solution concurrently with doing all of the other environmental analysis, to actually take the data that's coming out of the environmental analysis and put that into the conversation that we're having with City College around designing the parking solution the right way.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. We're going to move on to the final item here, which is general public comment, and this can be on anything that has not been on the agenda. I see we have one or two speakers. So again, I'm going to strictly enforce the two-minute comment period. We are 20 minutes behind our schedule already, so please keep that in mind as you make your comments. Thank you. And again, state your name and your neighborhood, and if you're part of an organization, please do that also.
Hi, my name is Sadie Williams. I'm from the Mission, and I think it's great that we're working out all the details about road maintenance, MTA, and parking, etc. But I think that the bigger problem out of all these things is definitely housing, and I would appreciate moving forward with this project as soon as possible. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Andrew from the Mission District. Among my group of friends, as people get married and as they have children, the common pattern is for them to struggle in the city for a while and then move out. Many of you may have seen my friends here who have a baby. It's the one baby here, which is... they're facing this decision right now of how long can we stay in the city. The rent is too expensive. I want to have a family here in the city, but I have to choose between living in San Francisco or having a family. And that's a horrible decision to make. But when I see apartments of this size come in, it gives me hope. And so I just want to say thank you to all the proponents of this this development and similar size developments. Thank you.
Jonah Martin from Glen Park. I'm on the Glen Park Association's Transportation Committee. I believe that Ocean Avenue is due for a single bore undergrounding of the K. That's the thing I believe. But I think that we should be building our housing around transit hubs, and this is a perfect example of a large development that puts plenty of density near a mass transit hub. We have BART, we have the K, we have the J, we have the M, we have the 4929, all of these available transit routes next to this development. I don't see why we should hold it up just for the parking. If we can dedicate land to a parking structure and figure out that feasibility later, then we can move forward with the housing, because that is the most important thing in this city right now.
Hi, my name's Aaron. I'm from Rushing Hill and a member of UB Action. We definitely need the housing. This is the most important issue for the city. This is a great opportunity to build transit-oriented housing. I think, you know, 1,000 units is okay. Should probably be more like 4,000, but we could compromise at 2,100. Bigger, better, taller, faster. Thank you very much.
Steve Armpinto, Sunnyside Neighborhood Association President. While it's true that more units may bring in more tax revenue to the city, there's going to be an additional cost to provide services to these additional units. Therefore, is a net benefit to the city really significant or different? Also, let's not forget the unquantifiable cost to the residents that live nearby by the impact to their quality of life. We, the residents of Sunnyside and Westwood Park, do have a right to have a say, however, in any project that will have an impact on our neighborhood. We have a right to minimize negative impact on our neighborhood and to also have our concerns addressed. We are not against housing by any means. However, we must be realistic about what our neighborhood can reasonably accomplish, and we must not let the urgency of this housing crisis force us and rush us into foolish, poor, and biased planning. Thank you.
Hello, my name is John Olson. I live north of the Panhandle. I'd like to be here to represent the people who would live in these units, and towards that end, I implore the committee and the community to support the development and to support it at a scale that will house as many human beings as possible. The housing shortage in San Francisco and the larger Bay Area is so severe that we cannot afford to be precious about how the housing is built or in what neighborhood or how tall or with how much parking. Every day that we delay a project for one of these reasons makes the project that much more expensive and that much less feasible to build, which exacerbates the shortage further. To questions about the environmental impact of the project, I'd ask the community to consider the impact of the potential residents of this development living almost anywhere else because they will. Living in a dense urban environment is the most sustainable, environmentally friendly way to live anywhere in the United States. The well-being of those who would love to live in these units, whether affordable or market rate, should not automatically be trumped by the concerns of the local residents who already have their home. The delay and denial of housing developments has consequences for those who would live in those developments and indeed whether they even get that opportunity. I'd like the community and the committee to consider that. Thank you.
My name is Rebecca Peacock. I am a resident of SoMa, and I'm here as a member of UB Action. First of all, I want to thank the organizers for holding this event in City Hall after working hours. I've always wanted to give public comment, but have been restricted by my location and working hours. So thank you for opening this up to the broader city community. I hope to see more meetings like this in the future. I live and work in San Francisco with my husband, and I'm not ashamed to say that I've lived in this city for less than a year. We moved here in April of 2017 in order to be closer to work. We both have the good fortune of being able to live in a beautifully dense SoMa neighborhood with easy access to Uni and BART and beautiful bus lines. I'm here to voice my support for the Balboa Reservoir Project because I believe it would extend to new and current residents the benefits my husband and I currently enjoy in South of Market neighborhood, namely a dense community with easy access to public transit. Quality urban amenities should not be restricted to our neighborhood or any one neighborhood in the city. Additionally, I don't think our quality of life should be restricted to our income bracket. That is why I'm especially thrilled that it will be at least 50% affordable. I support this development and I'm excited to welcome new neighbors to the city. 1,100 units can potentially house 2,500 people and families. It represents a forward step towards closing our man-made housing deficit. I fully support this project, and I hope to see it move forward and see more like it in the future. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Dan Fingle-Surma, and I'm a resident of Noah Valley and a member of UMB Action. And I'd also like to mention that my mother is a native San Franciscan, and my grandfather was a civil engineer on the Bay Bridge. Okay, so I have a downer for you. A little under 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. And being close to UCSF is really helpful if you're a cancer patient. I was able to take the 24 to chemo. My sister moved here from Manhattan as a direct result of my diagnosis, both to help care for me and to get time with me if, in case I wasn't going to make it. She struggled to find housing. Manhattan was more affordable to her, and that's sad. We need more housing. We need housing to be more affordable in San Francisco. And to do that, we need more housing. We need more affordable housing, and we need a lot more affordable housing and a lot more market rate housing so that anybody who wants to live here can. And the fact that it's taken almost 4 years and 26 meetings to get to this point, and then we're talking about taking another 2 years before we might start getting to build, that hurts people. So I feel like this needs to go a lot faster. We should build the maximum number of units we can on the site, and we should house the maximum number of people we can. And then one more thing, which is a comment about the value that City College provides. That number, I think, summarizes the increased economic activity due to the development of human capital of the residents of San Francisco. These are people that can take transit or their alternative transportation to City College. So reduced parking is not going to devalue City College. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Laura Fingle-Surma of Noe Valley. I'm supporting this project on behalf of more than 450 of my neighbors who are members of Progress Noe Valley, our pro-housing neighborhood group. I am also a cancer spouse. That was my husband who just talked to you. I appreciate the conversation around the scarce resource that City College is, but there are other scarce resources to consider. Of course, there's the environmental conversation, which I'm sure someone else will cover. But as a cancer spouse, I care about hospitals, okay? Dan had a diagnosis, 50%, he's 35, and they said, you have 50% chance of living, okay? There were five hospitals in this country that could help him. Two of those were in the Bay Area, okay? This is the scarce resource we have. These things matter. We have a wonderful, amazing infrastructure here. And everyone deserves access to that, okay? It was an incredible comfort to be able to stay near home when he was getting treatment, to be able to take the bus to his treatment. And I just, you know, we are extremely fortunate, and I'm in a support group online, and I see what other people across this country, when they face cancer diagnoses, are really dealing with. And I see, you know, the just total economic hardship that they go through. The fact that there are people, like there are many, many people who cannot afford $3,500 a month for a one bedroom in order to move here for access to things like UCSF and Stanford. So I'd like you to keep that in mind. I also wanted to speak to the above ground trains. We have the same issue in Noe Valley. The JA line could use a lot more trains. I've seen a great solution. I'm a big fan of the M Market subway idea, and I think that having more users would be an encouragement to move in that direction. I encourage you to look up the M Market subway idea. It's a great plan. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Gene Natoli. I live in Inner Richmond. I'm here with UMB Action. I moved here in May of 2013. I'm not ashamed to say that I'm not a lifelong San Franciscan. Shortly after I moved here, a friend introduced me to four other people who have all since moved back to where they came from or other places. Some of them moved back to Minnesota. Some of them moved to Brooklyn because it was cheaper. Brooklyn. I'm tired of watching these people who want to call San Francisco home leave. We're looking for dense, vibrant cities. We're looking for places like San Francisco to call home. We want to come here and add to the story of the city. We need the opportunity to do that. We need places to live. Almost all of us once moved here or had a relative who did. That's part of what makes it great. We all want to come here and be a part of the story of this city. With Balboa Reservoir, we have the opportunity to add 1,100 homes, places for people to live, including 50% affordable for current and future San Franciscans. But it's not just an opportunity, it's an obligation. We have to do more. We've shirked our responsibility for too long. We need to be bold and take advantage of opportunities like this. For the sake of everyone who's had to leave, for the sake of current and future San Franciscans, I'm imploring you to move forward this. I think this is a great idea. Thank you.
Hi there. I'm Alex, a resident of Soma. My neighbor is deeply impacted by the housing crisis caused by our neighborhoods taking too long to do their part to build enough housing for the city. It is wrong to have so many people struggling with housing costs. It is inhumane to have this many homeless people in the richest city in the world. More housing, especially housing near transit, is crucial to solving our housing affordability crisis that's hurting our families, our seniors, and our young workers in this city. The notion that housing can always be built somewhere else is what got us into this housing crisis in the first place. It's a notion that comes from those privileged enough to have a stable home, and forget the many that are one missed paycheck from eviction or already living on the street. Way too many people, including those essential to our communities, such as teachers, emergency responders, and others, have extremely long commutes from outside the city. Not making it possible for these people to live in the communities they serve is wrong. Thank you so much for all those that have been working in the trenches in support for more housing and on this project specifically. I came here today to support our fellow residents struggling with housing costs. I hope those that are opposed can consider the dire need for housing in our city and the real human impact the housing shortage is causing for many, many residents. Thank you.
I'm Caroline Bosch, a member of our resident of Richmond, of the Richmond District. I actually originally wanted to be a resident of Balboa Park area. I bid on about 10 houses in Ingleside, Sunnyside, all of those areas because I wanted to be close to BART so I could get rid of my car because I need to go to the East Bay often to visit my mother, my caretaker for health, and I got outbid on 10 different offers. So I had to move to Richmond because there is a huge crisis right now, a huge affordability crisis. I have a very good fortune to be able to be a homeowner in San Francisco, and that is way out of reach for many, many, many people, and it still was out of reach in that neighborhood close to BART because of the lack of especially smaller apartments like two-bedroom units, etc., because almost everything there is a single-family home. So I 100% support this project and support the people who are pushing it forward, and the crisis is real, and I'd like to see action now.
Good evening, my name is Daniel Camp. I'm a renter in the Castro, and I organize a group called Castro for Housing, which is a group of neighbors in the Castro supporting denser housing options. I wanted to address the issue of quality of life. Oftentimes when I'm walking home in my neighborhood late at night, I see people sleeping outside on the sidewalk. You know, we've had warmer weather than normal for this part of the year for the past 2 weeks or so, but normally at this time of year, it's pretty cold outside. It gets down into the 50s. Even in my apartment this morning, I woke up and was cold because of the lack of insulation. I cannot imagine what it is like to sleep outside in this weather. And, you know, honestly, my neighborhood's not even the worst part of the city for having people sleep outside. So in the interest of, you know, getting people off the streets and getting the homeless housed, we really need to consider the 1,100 units in this proposal so far to be the absolute bare minimum floor for number of housing units. We should be shooting way, way higher than this. And also, on that same token, we should also be moving this process along a lot faster than we currently are. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joel from Alamo Square. I think it's just a garage, knock it down. We need housing, low income, do a lot more, 1,100 units, you know, try to get 25, 3,000, 4,000 units. It's possible. They have it in other countries. How can we have it?
Hi, Robert from Alamo Square. I just want to say that in my social circle, in my age group, I know precisely two people who own a house or any sort of real estate at all. And the only way they were able to afford it was because they're a married couple and their parents helped them out. Is this really the future of San Francisco? Do our parents need to buy us houses? Who is going to pay for housing when it's cost so much? We need this proposal. We need the Balboa Reservoir housing because more housing will lower the cost. I may never have a chance to own any property in the city if the cost of housing does not come down. Thank you.
Hi there, everybody. My name is Bob Akis-Fandiari. I am a neighbor out in the outer Richmond, and I lead, along with Jane, Natoli, and a few others, a group called Grow the Richmond. We're 150-plus neighbors just volunteering, organizing to try to get housing built both in our neighborhood in the Richmond District and occasionally show up in support of other neighborhoods where we believe that there's great opportunities to build dense infill housing. I'm here because my story is really privileged, and it kind of dovetails with the last speaker. I grew up in Walnut Creek in the East Bay, and I went to school, and I was told for all the years of my life that if you work hard and you do a good job at school and you play by the same set of rules as everyone else, you can make it in this country if you try. After school, I went to work on the Obama campaign. That worked out really well. We got the man reelected. It was a lot of fun. And then I needed to pivot and try to get a job, and one that didn't have a deadline and an ending date. And so I ended up where I'm at now. I work for one of the tech startups in the city, and I don't get paid that well. I'm not an engineer. I'm a support person. And when I finally got hired, converted from a 1099 to a W-2 employee, I wanted to get out of my parents' house. I wanted to get out of my childhood bedroom that I've been in for almost a year after moving back from the campaign. And I looked, and I looked, and I looked, and this was in 2013, and I couldn't find anything. And so I went kind of crawling back on my hands and my knees and talked to my father, and we cut a deal. And he said, all right, I'll buy you a condo. You'll rent it to me. And then when I retire, I'm going to move in. That's a really privileged story. It's an obnoxious story, how privileged I am that I have parents who can buy housing for me to be in, that I can afford with my meager salary. But not everybody has that story, not even close. And if we do not build the amount of housing that we need to end the shortage, then we are going to be perpetuating this cycle of inherited wealth forever. This city can do better. This district can do better. And I want to thank you, too, also, for volunteering your time. Thank you very much. Please build the housing that can do the most units. Thank you.
All right. Hi, I'm Sasha, and I'm a renter in Potrero Hill. And I grew up in the Bay Area, and after college, I was so excited to move to San Francisco so I could be close to my friends and my family and the community that I grew up in. But unfortunately, what I found since moving here is that most of my friends from high school and from home can't afford to live in the city or anywhere close if they don't work in tech. I spoke to my best friend from high school on the phone this morning, who is a woman, a theater director, and a queer person. And she's worried that she's never going to be able to move back home to the Bay Area on her salary as an artist. I strongly support building the maximum number of units at the Balboa Reservoir. This is a unique opportunity for 50% affordable units near transit and near a university. This would be an enormous benefit to our city. And with the current state of our city's housing crisis, I think it's imperative we move the project forward with the maximum number of units as quickly as possible. Thank you.
So, my name is Andrew Menzer. I'm with ENB Action. I live in the Western Edition. Mr. Aaron said something that's kind of disturbing to me, which is how can it not be in the interest of San Francisco to increase the housing supply, bring down the median housing price, and we can share this, like, say, we've been privileged to live in with as many people as possible. How's that? I think he said it's not in San Francisco's interest. I find that ridiculous. I mean, but I think the important thing here is, like, whatever the solution with the parking for City College, whatever it is, the city needs housing, and that this is, like, a systematic thing that we all need and is affecting law lives, clearly. So, yeah, thank you. And, again, thank you for volunteering your time. We really appreciate it.
Good evening, and thanks for having this meeting at City Hall. It really makes things easier. My name is Melik. I live in the Sunset. I'm a lot of the things people who try to prevent housing from being built hate. I'm a millennial. I'm a father of two young kids. I'm an immigrant. I actually worked in the city. I'm not in tech. I also don't think you need to own a car to get around San Francisco, and I myself bike and take transit everywhere, including to take my kids to school and take Cantonese classes at the City College. When I came to the US, I came directly to San Francisco, and our housing situation has been my number one preoccupation since then. We've lived in unsanitary and unsafe housing. We've lived in a very tiny one bedroom, and when a lot of our friends decided to leave the city once they had kids, we decided to stay here, and we are now paying 60% of our income on rent for a small and very old apartment, because that's where our community, our support network is now. So yeah, I'm not here tonight for me of my generation. It's too late for us already. I'm here for my kids who are born and raised here in San Francisco. For them and their generation, 1100 homes is not going to cut it. It's near Bath Station, it's near three light rail lines, and last time I checked, there was a dozen bus line in 5 minutes walk radius. So for future generation, you need to take into account that we know already what kind of urban density is good for the planet. I encourage you to take a look at the Sierra Club's own anti-sprawl website. If you don't want people to commute from Sacramento, like some staff at my work is currently doing, it's not 1,100 units that you need here, but 2,000 or more. Anything less than that would be criminal. Think about the planet, think about the children. Where are they going to live? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jimmy, and I grew up in the Sunset. I'm also a student at City College. I've been a full-time student for 4 years, and currently I'm a part-time student. And as a student, my biggest expense and my classmates' biggest expenses were always rent and paying for housing. And I remember having discussions with my classmates. We would, bitch and complain about our finals and our instructors, but also how expensive rent is. And when you're a student, you're really just, working a job at a restaurant or at a Starbucks and, making minimum wage. It's really difficult for us. So therefore, we really do need housing, and I'm really here to advocate for more housing. As well, my classmates and I, the majority of us, we all take public transportation. None of us drives because driving is expensive, and it's just you're just sitting in traffic all day anyways. So to help us, it would really be helpful if, the city invests more in public transportation, in bicycling, in bar, and making these streets safer, because sometimes, when I'm walking across the street, it's kind of dangerous because I'm always afraid of getting hit by a car and stuff like that. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jeff Hodges. I live in the Mission, and I'm a YIMBY. I want to first thank you for your work here. It's very important, and you've been doing a lot of it. Over the last decade, I've lost count of the amount of friends that I've lost who have been squeezed out by the rent prices here. That includes friends with good, even great jobs. Most of them simply because they wanted to start a new family. These are the kind of people that we want in this city, that create the kind of vibrancy and energy that we love here. This project is a step towards a beautiful Paris-scale density San Francisco that we need, the kind of thing that we need for the people of this city to survive. If we maximize the housing, add another 1,000 units, it would get us even closer. I can't wait to see this project completed, and housing delayed is housing denied. Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Yap Vale. As I said the last time, I live in Soma, and I'm a member of YIMBY Action. And I would like to thank you for having this meeting in this place and at this time. I was there last time at the City College meeting, and I talked there in favor of the idea of having a meeting like this. And I suspected, after hearing what was going on there, that after these apparently 26 meetings where people talk about water pipes and the fire department isn't a fire water supply and parking, it's possible to lose sight of why this whole business is happening in the first place. Why do we build apartments? Why do we build homes? We build homes because people need places to live. And I think that tonight we have demonstrated that the problem that this project was set out to solve is very real, and we need to make sure that whatever else we do solve it. But I also want to make sure that this doesn't turn into a false dichotomy. that we don't turn this into an us versus them conflict where it's either the young people or the old people, it's either the native San Franciscans or it's immigrants like me. Because I don't think that we have that kind of conflict. The practical problems can be solved. The problem of putting more homes in the amount of land we have a solution to that. You stack them on top of each other. Look, the ancient Romans did this. And when we talk about things like, how will we pay for the extra firefighting? How will we pay for the extra education? That's not a new problem either. We pay for these things with taxes, and the way to get more taxes is to get more things to tax. And I think that if the concern really is that we won't have enough taxes to fund all these services, we ought to possibly consider something that's not just not in conflict with the goal of more housing, but that is actually precisely aligned with the goal of more housing.
I'm going to have to ask you to
Thank
wrap
you.
It up. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Norma Guzman from the Sunset. And last semester, I was choosing between the CCSF campuses as to where to take an evening class. And from the Sunset, I felt a lot safer going to a denser, much more active environment, like the one in downtown on 4th Street. And so I chose to stay away from the Balboa campus because I didn't feel as safe as a woman traveling by myself and taking a bus late at night. And I also want to say that as we're going through this process, and this takes many years, that there are lots of families, lots of low-income families in the city that are waiting and have been waiting for years to get a subsidized apartment to live in. And my own family spent 8 years getting an apartment to live in. And I just want to say, if there's any way to create incremental building in this project to get some subsidized buildings moving faster, that would be wonderful. And we don't maybe have to wait for this magical large master plan to take place. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Isaac Rosenberg. I live in Potrero Hill. I described this kind of like planning and process to a friend of mine, and he said it was, quote, dumb. And I absolutely agree with him because it is dumb and it doesn't accomplish what we need to accomplish, which is getting more homes to live here. And okay, so you have an environmental impact report. Does that consider whether people fly from Texas to California each month because they can't live here? Come on, guys. This is very obvious. We need homes. We need people to live here. And they need, like, that's it. Please approve this.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mark McGregor from Truro. I moved here about 8 years ago to be a part of this incredible city, and I consider myself very lucky to have been able to stay here. Many of my friends and colleagues have not been able to stay. As they've started families, they've had to move away, and I see developments like this as an incredible opportunity to allow more people to live here and allow more people to come here. So thank you for your work on getting this through, and I hope we can build as many homes here as possible. Thank you.
Hello again, Corey Smith on behalf of the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. First and foremost, thank you for agreeing to have this meeting downtown. It was something that I really pushed for. I thought it was really important to continuously hear from additional voices in the city. I think we've all kind of touched on this. This is a big regional project. It is at the center of a major regional transportation system that we built a long time ago to move the Bay Area around. And so I just really appreciate that from a personal level. Second thing, you know, I got a number of different emails from people who are regulars at the meetings essentially asking me a couple of things. Number one, if people care about this, why don't they show up? And then number two, if this is so well located next to transit, why can't we just have the meetings done there? And I just wanted to address both of them. For the people that we came with, how many of you have been to a different community meeting for a different project in the last month, say? Notori's going to be in Berkeley tomorrow. We got a bunch going to Millbrae. We go to Brisbane. We go all over the Bay Area and do all of these. I realize that you are living and breathing this every single day, but all these people live it and breathe it on a bunch of different projects all over the Bay Area. So that was one of the challenges we had, is to get to figure out when is it important to turn people out, when is it not. The other thing, and I just need to make sure I get this in there every single time, the pedestrian experience between the BART station and the reservoirs sucks. It is not walkable right now. One of the best things about this project is that's going to be improved. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Victoria Fierce again. I'm from downtown Oakland, and I'm actually here today representing the 900-plus members of East Bay for Everyone. We're a housing abundancy organization based out in the East Bay. We're a member of the MB Party, much like these folks. And I want to tell a story. So I live in downtown Oakland. My rent is $2,000 a month. I live with my partner, not by choice, but by circumstance. If we could live apart, we would absolutely love it, because, man, we're stuffed into a tiny studio apartment, the two of us. We somehow managed to figure out how to make two rooms out of it with a paper divider wall. It's not ideal. It's not best. The second cheapest apartment in my building is $3,000. The third cheapest is $4,000, with, of course, the cheapest being my own. Again, this isn't because I want to pay $2,000 a month. I love living downtown. It's right next to BART. It's right next to transit. I can bike anywhere. There's a grocery store in my building. It's awesome. I just wish it would be cheaper, because that also means that people with less privilege like me, such as somebody who is not a white person who previously worked in tech, would be able to enjoy downtown and enjoy these wonderful things. And I want to build on that and say, my story is not terribly unique. I want you to keep in mind the faces and the people who've been up here and speaking both for and against this project. And consider the people who don't look like me. They're not young. They're not, you know, queer. They're not trans. They're not with purple hair. And consider what position they're on and why that's not necessarily representative of my future. I'm young. I'm still young. I might live to be 300 years old, but I'm still going to outlive the decision that's going to be made here tonight. Whatever happens here affects my future, affects my partner's future, affects my kids' future, affects the 900-plus members of East Bay for Everyone, because when you don't build housing in Balboa Park, that puts pressure on Oakland, that puts pressure on Berkeley, Richmond, Lafayette, all these cities out there. We don't want to be displaced as much as the next person. So if you don't build this housing, I'll be displaced, and that'll suck.
My name is Hedda Thieme. I'm a Westwood Park resident for 58 years. I do not own a car. I walk. I take public transportation. Don't think that when you want to escalate streetcars, that will work, or if you put them underground, because the downtown has a confinement. And they will all be in a bottle deck. Since I'm living here for 58 years, I have to tell you that the housing situation is partly man-made. On my block alone, there are three houses empty. One for 15 months, one for 6 months. They are sold. They have owners, they have been paid cash. And if you think you have a housing problem, maybe you like to address the empty houses standing available for whoever may come by ship. And in regards to the parking situation at City College, I like to point out to you that 1,400 parking lots present approximately 5% of the student body. 5%. If you think 5% is a lot, there are people who do get free tuition, but they still have to earn a living for food and housing. And they have to rush from the lesson to the work, wherever it is. So do not underestimate 5%. And they were, yes, sorry, I'm 58 years old. And I speak slowly. I'm very sorry. 100,000 people.
I'm going to have to
being,
ask. There are several speakers.
Yeah, but 100,000 people are being put into the city in addition as per the late
Edwin.
And they need, and they need also to be educated.
Please.
So
thank
remember
you.
That.
Enough.
Hi, I'm Mike, and I live in Glen Park now, but prior to that, I lived the block away from the reservoir site. My wife and I are fortunate enough to be able-bodied, and she was able to take walk to BART, take that to work. I was able to take the K to work. And again, I know that not everybody can take public transit, but there are a lot of people who can, and it's a shame when they would love to live that lifestyle, but they're forced to live someplace that they need to depend on a car. And even us, we have a two-year-old right now. Only place we could get her into daycare is in Soma. And she's at an age now where I can no longer carry her on the trains. If there was a daycare center within walking distance of where I live, I would be able to take her there and then take the train into work. Right now I have to drive into work as a result. And so I wanted to touch on, I know that this site is going to have a child care center. I think that's terrific. It helps to make the neighborhood more walkable. And obviously, I support as much housing as we can get on this site. It's an opportunity to build transit-rich housing without displacing anybody. Even if some of the buildings towards, especially the center of the site, could be tall without casting a shadow on anybody who already lives there. And I think it would be a shame if we wasted this opportunity by building less than the site is capable of.
Hello again, Milo Trouse. So I want to address some of the opposition arguments against this proposal, and two of them kind of stick in my mind. One of them was somebody was like, well, we shouldn't take away so much parking because the students need it to get to school. It'll be better for them if there's more parking. And clearly, I think this person, even though they might express otherwise, they're not really concerned about the well-being of the students. Because if they were, then they would recognize that it's better if you're a student, if you can live close to the school you're going to. And the students who were here said that they wanted places to live. So that doesn't add up. They're interested in something else, not the well-being of the students. And again, the fellow from Sunnyvale who was like, no, by no means, you know, we're not against housing, but clearly he's against housing. If he wasn't against housing, then he wouldn't be here talking about having less homes. So there's some other motive, and I think it comes down to privilege. And people who live in a nice neighborhood that is expensive and they're happy there may not want to share their privilege. And I think you need to ask yourself when you're here on this body deciding what's going to happen, what is the purpose of a city in the first place? What attracted these people to be in there and achieve their privileged locations? It's the same thing that's attracting people here now. And I'm lucky that I can be here and forthright argue in my best interest, which is access to opportunity for my generation, for people after me. But I think some of the people against this really just want to protect their own privilege and are not interested in letting other people have a fair shot. And I don't think that's morally defensible. So just be aware for that when you're hearing reasons to not build to the maximum amount of units.
Hi, Jennifer Hagee from Sunnyside. I'm glad to hear all these stories. It's terrible. We know that there's a horrible situation in San Francisco. We've been pushing for affordable housing. I waited a long time to finally be able to rent in San Francisco. I waited a long time before I could finally buy with my husband in Sunnyside, a small little place that's right connected to the next places. Down the block, family moved over from Potrero Hill, where they said it was, they lived there, but their two little children, it was just not friendly because it was becoming too dense, too difficult, and they were so happy to be in a family-friendly area. We have lots of elementary schools and preschools, and so it is that. And San Francisco is lacking good neighborhoods for children to bring up families, and so I think we need to take all of that into consideration. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Michael Chen. I live in Lower Peck Heights. I'm a volunteer with NB Action. I work a lot in numbers, but I'm going to try to stay out of numbers and talk about stories. I used to live in Russian Hill, and I used to live in Russian Hill, and my building neighbor downstairs, Joy, put up with my pacing around in my bedroom for 6 months before she finally told me, hey, you're making a lot of noise. Last year, she was owner moved and evicted from her rent-controlled apartment and finds it harder to stay in the city. I know someone at work, Liliana, she works in food service. She has two children. She's afraid of being priced out of her home and having to live somewhere very far away to get to work, and instead of spending time with her kids, she has to spend time on her commute. I have another friend, Jared, who works in education, and right now he lives in the Hate with two roommates, but again, he can't see a future for himself to stay in San Francisco if he wants to have a family and raise kids. I think the neighborhoods around Balboa Reservoir would be extremely lucky to have my friends as neighbors, my friend Joy, my friend Liliana, my friend Jared. I think we should think about the benefits of neighbors, not just their costs, right? We should think of them as assets. More neighbors means that, hey, you have more foot traffic, which means that you can support a safer neighborhood. We have places where we can have more retail, more coffee shops, more bars. Maybe you don't have bars, but more pet stores, more restaurants, more things that people can walk to in those neighborhoods. We should think of our neighbors, our future neighbors, as our future friends, our future spouses, our future daughters-in-law, our sons-in-law, future community leaders, future people that we want to be around. That's the fundamental nature of cities, right? Is the fact that we all live close to other people, and even if we don't like all of the folks we live around, we can find our own communities. Please approve this housing. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sonia. I want to point out that one of the advantages of having this downtown is not just that it's literally more accessible for people, but also the messaging that when we have these meetings right just next to the site, it implies that the only people's opinion who matter are people who are right next to the site. But that wasn't the main thing I want to talk about. I want to give some context. While you're up here, pass by, I'm sure you're going back on BART, go to 8th and Market, that's the Trinity. That is the densest development in all of San Francisco. That's what 400 apartments per acre looks like. And those are average square foot, 600, they're average 600 square foot. It's about 24 stories. You should visit during the day too, because there's a beautiful courtyard in the middle. It's very civilized, it's incredibly lovely. It's kind of my favorite thing. We have the technology. We could have built 400 units per acre at Balboa Reservoir, and I think that's the standard. That would have been 6,000 apartments of average square foot, 600 square foot. So, you know, when I'm looking at this project, for a lot of people, I think there might be some confusion. It's because I think for a lot of people, they're like, oh, it's a big project. Why do all these people think that it's, you know, anti-housing or it's too small? Well, we could have had 6,000. And we have 1,100, which is good, but it feels like a loss going forward, because we could have accommodated so many more people, and as you guys have heard, there's such a massive demand that it's not at all obvious why we have so many fewer apartments than we could have had there. Thank you.
Laura from Westwood Park. I wasn't going to talk, but that one speaker upset me so much. If you build housing next to City College, it is not going to house all the students that commute there. It's not like that solves the problem of parking because the students will all live there. They'll just be able to go there. I mean, it's a crazy idea. And I also wanted to really address his word privilege. I didn't have a 40-hour work week till I was 50 years old. I worked two or three jobs most of my life. And my housing costs have always been way over 50%. And I know San Francisco is hard, and I'm not saying everybody else should have it as hard as I had it. But to say that the people that own houses are privileged, I think is really unfair. Maybe call it selfish that we want the neighborhood to stay nice, but I feel like they're being selfish. They don't want mom and dad to help them like my mom and dad had to help us. They want the taxpayers to help them. To me, it's like, use the word selfish, but then it's there's both of us are being selfish. We both have our own agenda, our own interests, and we have to coordinate in some way. But to say that we're the only ones that are being selfish, it's just really, really unfair.
Hi everyone, my name is Alex. I live in District 8. I actually grew up in Brooklyn in a very dense apartment building. And, you know, a lot of people say you can't really raise kids in an apartment block. But actually, growing up in Brooklyn was great. All my friends were close by. We could go to a park. And you know what? We all turned out absolutely fine. I would also like to say that as a, I guess, former New Yorker, I have never owned a car. While I do miss the New York City subway, I do take public transportation almost everywhere in the city. And I do advocate for dense transit-oriented development, which this would be. And this is right on a transit corridor. It's a great opportunity to build housing for people, for as many people as we can build housing for. If I had an opportunity to live in this transit-oriented development, I would definitely take it, and I would never buy a car and take the Muni or the BART to work or wherever I needed to go. So let's build housing for as many people as we can. Thank you.
Francine Lafrano, Westwood Park. And I'd like Laura to take issue with the comments that anybody that's against housing doesn't has a privilege and doesn't want to share their privilege. I think that to try and speak to what's in the hearts and minds of other people is morally wrong. You know, I live in Westwood Park, and I'm not a privileged person. I work very hard to achieve what I've achieved in life and given many sacrifices, including not having a family and a lot of other things to have my lifestyle. Westwood Park people or people that are against housing are not necessarily against housing at all. We're against over having too many units. You know, we in Westwood Park supported a sensible development that will fit into the neighborhood and fit into the area with congestion and parking and City College in mind. And I just want to set the record straight here. It's not that we're against housing. We want a sensible number, and I really resent being called and labeled as some privileged, you know, white person. You know, that's really, it's really offensive, and I don't think that that's the right kind of public comment to be making. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Stephen Buss. I'm the lead organizer with Mission YIMBY, which is here in the Mission District of San Francisco. I'm not going to talk about privilege. I recognize the people who own their homes. Some got lucky. Some worked really hard. And all of my friends are working really hard. But, you know, I know a lot of people that have had to leave the state, not just the city, but the state, because the whole state's unaffordable. And so when I see this development, like it's a good number of units, and to reflect the previous comment, if we build housing next to the school, it's not going to house all the students. But the solution to that isn't to not build units, it's to build more. Let's talk about the dream, the idea of America, the dream of California, where we said, we can do this. We can go to California and build an incredible bridge. We can go to California and found a company and change the world. And everyone in this room that opposes the housing is saying, no, that period of America is over. We won't build the housing because we can't. And that's not America. That's not California. That's not who we are as a people. We can do this. We can build housing. And if it's not enough housing for the students, let's double the size. Let's build another building. Our future won't be built by saying no to everything. We have to say yes.
Hi, my name is Alika. I'm a former resident of Noe Valley and current, hopefully temporary, resident of Oakland. I would like to support all of the comments here that are in support of building more housing at this location. It is absurd that we have to subsidize people who make the median income. That's ridiculous. And for going forward, we need transit-oriented development because that is the only way that we can meet our climate goals. I wanted to also make some comments on the site plan. One of the principles in the planning documents here was to design new streets as public spaces which are intimate, safe pedestrian environments while encouraging social interactions between diverse users from the site, adjacent neighborhoods, and City College. I've seen a lot of analysis of the traffic patterns, but I haven't seen an analysis of the sociological patterns and how people would use these public spaces. The site plan looks like a circulation, like everything is circulation, and that doesn't create the sense of enclosure that would encourage people to dwell in the spaces. And I think I can't tell from the site plan really what the streetscape is going to look like, but I have a concern that there's a lot of frontage of large monolithic buildings, and these don't encourage interaction between the people who inhabit or use those buildings and the people on the street. Overall, the plan seems to be scaled at an institutional scale rather than a human scale. And so I would like to ask that the development committee take a closer look at these aspects and to the principles of the San Francisco Planning Committee to recognize and respond to urban patterns, to create defined and active street walls, and to design active building fronts, and to not make the mistakes of so many projects in the 20th century, which created a lot of public space, but which was not activated enough to remain safe.
Steve Martin Pinto, Sunnyside. I just want to throw out a few facts out there. The population density of San Francisco is 18,000 per square mile and rapidly approaching 19,000. The next densest city in the Bay Area, Daly City, 12,000 per square mile. Berkeley, 11,000 per square mile. After that's Oakland at about 8,000. Our population is already bursting at the seams. And what I'm wondering is, what is our government doing to work with coalition governments around the Bay Area to address what is really not just an SF problem, but a Bay Area-wide problem, the housing crisis? We in SF cannot be expected to shoulder the burden of the entire demand for housing in the Bay Area. We have to work stronger with coalition governments around the Bay Area, like Mountain View, Cupertino, Concord, Richmond, you name it, to have them address, like we are addressing, the housing crisis in the Bay Area. Thank you.
And this will be our last speaker.
Chris Bowman. I'd like to talk about density again. Again, we're talking about 1,100 units per 18 acres. You know how many acres there is in a square mile? 640. So we're talking about the rate of roughly 40 to 50,000 units if you extended that to an entire square mile, per square mile. That's the density of Manhattan. The people that are here today are talking about Manhattanization of San Francisco. You know, and quite frankly, my grandparents got here back in the 1880s, and we had maybe 300,000 people at the time. And you know, then the city expanded to the west side when they built the tunnels. And basically it was suburbia. and they want to basically destroy suburbia, which is the west side of the city.
Excuse me, we're not supposed to do that.
Now, the second thing I would like to make is everyone's talking about, well, this is going to really solve the problem with the shortage of housing and everything else. There's not one assurance in this plan that any San Franciscan will get housing from this development. For all we know, it could be, you know, 1,100 speculators from Asia or from overseas that take it, and there won't be one bit of housing going this way. How much of the units that have been built in District 6 are not going to full-time residents? There's second units, there are third units for people who want to be here for, like, you know, 4 months or 4 weeks, but it's not going to San Franciscans. Thank you.
Okay, the very last speaker.
Harry Bernstein, Merced Heights. just a couple things. I'm one of the people who said students need parking, partly because as a teacher, I see my students are coming from all kinds of places, as many of you are, those who spoke tonight, say, but they have commitments of work and transit as well. They can't just bicycle and from their opportunities. How many of you go by Phelan Avenue during the day when school is in session? There's a solid line of traffic going from Sunnyside District to Ocean Avenue because of the... It's not just numbers, it's because the layout and the access through there is limited. You've got this substantial, 9.5 acre Reardon High School. The property was set aside for that since 1933. And people are funneling through small areas. There were going to be 500 units during the whole time that this process was under consideration. Suddenly there's 1,100. And it's just untenable. Also, the history of the college, the voters voted for this Performing Arts Center back in 2001, in 2005. And it was supposed to be built in 2008, and 2010, and 2012. We had an accreditation crisis, all kinds of political things. That, I think, has to be a priority for the future of the school. And there's, we had bad planning there. We have a new planner. So there have to be some priorities. So I know housing is still needed. And the college really needs to take over that land.
Okay. Bring it back to the committee. I'm going to start. First of all, I just want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank the committee here for listening to this. I want to thank all the speakers for taking time out of their evening to come and speak. And I want to thank staff for trying to internalize this and do the right thing. One of the things that makes this city so great is this process, and it's not always pretty, but I'm glad we're going through it. Okay, other final comments from the committee?
Hi, Christy Godinez from Lake Wilmerdine High School. I just want to echo I don't know who it was that said, you know, I hear all this talk about we're going to lose City College students if we don't have parking, but what about we're going to lose City College students if we don't have housing? I think that's something really important to look at. And I also don't know what the data is, how many City College students actually live in the city versus live in the East Bay and so on. And I also want to say that, yes, it is a privilege to own a home in San Francisco. In the same way that I tell my students, I work at a private school, even students that are on full scholarship versus the ones that pay $40,000 plus to attend the school, it is a privilege to be a student at a private school, no matter where you're coming from. And I'll just close with saying that with privilege comes great responsibility.
Okay, other final comments from the CAC? Okay. Item 6 is closed meeting discussion. Item discussion covering partnership updates, meeting evaluation, meeting recap, and next steps. I just want to mention that there is another part of the Balboa Park area station plan, and that is the Balboa Park station. And they are looking at, and I'm a member of that committee, we will be developing our priorities for our work program for the next year. Included in that is 100 units of housing, affordable housing at the upper yard. There are significant park improvements taking place, and they are unfolding right now. There is a safety study that has been funded for Geneva and San Jose, and probably of interest to everybody here is the connections between our Balboa Park Station and City College and this housing, this proposed housing. So the next meeting is of that committee will be on March 20th, and I encourage you to be at that meeting also to provide your comments. The next meeting of this committee is, I'm not quite sure what that date is.
So it is tentatively March 19th. We will confirm on the newsletter.
Okay, one final request.
I think you got an email from somebody from City College. That'll be part of the record today, too. Is that right? Or you might have got it on your way down here. But there's an email from the city from somebody City College. If not, I can send it to you and be part of the record.
Okay, we've all spoken. We're all tired. I'm going to entertain a motion to adjourn. Second it. It looks unanimous. Thank you, everybody. You may now cheer.
Lots to listen to tonight.
Yes.